Tracy Morgan in the Next Tier Bank studios, Next Tier Bank, your hometown community bank. Your news time is just about 12:30. Dave Mularkey's coming up next with It's Your Turn. Thanks for joining us and have a good day.
And now, it's your turn with Dave Mularkey. 724-283-2525. It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's your turn on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn, 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Mularkey.
Well, hello there. Welcome. Nice to have you with us on the Tuesday edition of It's Your Turn. The weather forecast changed a little bit as we headed into the morning hours today. Early, the weather folks had said, no worry, no precip today. And the next thing you know, it was snowing to beat the band here for a while. Big fat flakes. So they adjusted the forecast. Nothing serious, no accumulation, and we're not looking for any during the day today. Better chance of some more precip tomorrow. Main story is gray skies. We see a lot of those here in western Pennsylvania during the winter months. Hey, we're going to be talking about Carved in Ice on the first portion of the program today. This has become an annual event, and it's really becoming a destination event nowadays. It's sponsored by Butler AM Rotary, and we have two Rotarians here to give us all of the details on that. Peggy Weckerly is here. Peggy, it's always good to see your smiling face.
Always a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, nice to see you again. And Adina Martinez is also back with us. Adina is with Next Tier Bank, and you're a Butler AM Rotarian.
I am, yes. Mm-hmm. Good to be here.
This is how many years, Dina, for the Carved in Ice Winter Festival now?
This is our fifth annual Carved in Ice event.
Time flies, huh? I can remember the first one. Nothing like that had ever been done around here before. And Peggy, you weren't quite sure how it was going to fly, huh?
Well, we weren't sure how it was going to fly, and more interestingly, we had no idea what we were doing. you talk about people, the blind leading the blind, and somehow it came together, and we had thousands, and we had 65 degree weather for an ice festival.
That's right. I remember the first one. It was a bright, sunny day, mid-60s. Actually, it brought out a lot of people. It brought out people in their T-shirts and tank tops. And, you know, the ice stayed pretty good for most of the day.
Yeah, and actually, you folks were with us that day.
Yeah, mm-hmm. We were up there. Mm-hmm. It was great fun. So, what about this year's? What's the dates coming up soon, huh?
February 21st and 22nd, that's Friday and Saturday.
That's not this weekend, but it's the following.
The following weekend. Mm-hmm. It's like less than 2 weeks away. Mm-hmm. And Dina will fill you in about how thrilled we are about our Friday evening edition, because that's new for this year. We've been wanting to do it. We didn't think we were ready for it. So this year we started planning. I think our first meeting was the last week of August. So we've really been putting some hard work into deciding what to do.
You know, I saw your poster, Dina, and mm-hmm. I said Friday evening and Saturday. I don't remember it being a Friday evening before, so this is new.
This is new this year, yeah. Fifth year, we wanted to have something new. We wanted to be able to expand the event mm-hmm. And just bring more people in to see it. Mm-hmm. A lot of people are in town during the week, not here on the weekends, so we wanted to have people that capture them while they were still here, let them see what's going on. Maybe, you know, if they stop after work, they want to come back the next day and bring the family. Or they can bring the family that night. We'll be there from 5 to 8 on Friday the 21st, and then we'll be back on Saturday from 11 to 4.
Still in Diamond Park, though, right?
That is correct, mm-hmm. right.
It occurs to me that the ice sculptures will look different at night than they do during the daytime.
We're very excited to have the lights on the ice this year. it is something that our ice carvers do at other events, larger events that they have around the state. And they kept trying to talk us into this, and we finally bit the bug this year, and we're going to have the lights on the ice. And I just think that it'll be a great thing, and it'll be new and different for us. And
absolutely,
it'll also give more advertising advantage for our people, that the businesses that buy the ice from us.
It'll be fantastic. Have you ever seen the difference between the Niagara Falls during the daylight and at night when they light it up and shine those beautiful colored spotlights on it? It's a world of difference.
Pardon the pun, but it's like day and night.
That's true. That's very good. Very, very good. Or very bad, Peggy, I'm not sure.
I'm sorry, one of the two. Just came to the tip of my tongue.
Carved in ice, these are, for folks who have never been there before, Peggy, talk about it a little bit. These are a variety of different ice sculptures that are...
Literally, and this year we have a tremendous number of sculptures. We're looking at about, and keep in mind, I know since I'm primarily the one that does most of the sales, there are still some entities out there that tend to think when you're talking about selling an ice sculpture, even though you tell them it's downtown, they're thinking of the old proverbial swan, you know, ice swan on a table at a banquet. These are 40 by 20 by 10, so they're very good sized pieces of ice. This year we're going to have in the neighborhood of about 65 different ice sculptures, some huge ones that are going to be fabulous for people who have never been there. And even if you have been, perhaps you don't realize what makes this happen are the local businesses. Because without their support, they're the ones that purchase the ice. They're the ones who choose the designs. So I think that's huge. Now, every year from the very first year, we've had the ice slide for the kids. The ice company had told us that, oh, you have to have this. Kids just love it. Well, from the time they finish carving it until the time we're done, there are kids on that slide constantly.
Folks, this is, if you've never been there, come this year because it's a lot of fun. But it is... It is a sliding board, you know, just like you would see at the park.
Only smaller,
except,
a little shorter.
Yeah, it's not quite as high, but it's and it's made out of ice. And the kids go up the top and they slide down, and they love it. They love it.
It's fantastic. And I think two of the things, too, that we want to highlight that people will see when they come Friday night is our event sponsor for the fifth year, Deal. Toyota Deal Automotive is doing a huge dragon out of 12 blocks of ice, and I see your face.
My gosh.
It's incredible. People are going to have so much fun with that, and when you see it in the lights, it's going to be something. Even when you see it Saturday, it's going to be something. Kids are going to thoroughly enjoy it. And then this year we're putting a little twist on something. Conlon Tarker has been with us for, this will be the fourth year. And this year, they stepped up to the plate and said that they wanted to be the Friday night sponsor. And so they're going to have a chair. We've never quite had a chair. We've had some thrones. This is a chair using their theme of having the shamrock and the pot of gold with a chair. So people are going to be able to sit on the chair, thoroughly enjoy themselves, take pictures. This is a picture opportunity. I know I was talking to some friends of mine, and they were saying, you know, after last year, every time you went on Facebook, there were pictures everywhere of people and their kids and ice. And that's part of what the fun is. And I want to stress, I've had so many questions about, well, how much does it cost to go?
Yeah, what's the admission?
Free.
There is no admission charge.
There is no admission. The only time you pay any money at all might be $2 or $3 or $4 or $5, depending upon if you want to buy, if you want to sample chili. We're having a chili cook-off on Saturday. Friday night, I'll let Dina talk about the adult beverages we're having and some of the other things we're doing. And, of course, we have food trucks, and we don't have duplicates. We have food trucks individually offering very specific types of food. We just we try to keep it unique so that everybody benefits for being there.
So it might be a chance to have a brewski on Friday night.
There is definitely a chance of a brewski and a wine. If you're a wine drinker, that will also be available.
That's great.
White and red.
White and red. Yeah, we have a variety of wines. We're actually getting those all through Anna Marie's Winery out in East Butler. And also we're working with the Bonaire distributors, Bonaire Beer, and to purchase the brewskis that we'll be having there.
So but that'll just be on Friday night, though?
Friday night is our adult beverage evening, right? Mm-hmm. We're going to have some entertainment, live entertainment. We have Tom Pappas booked, and mm-hmm. he'll be playing from 5 to 6 and then also from 7 to 8. And then from 6 to 7, we will have the Butler High School Jazz Group playing for us. All of our entertainment will be in the symphony lobby. And it will be piped out to the Diamond for us.
Excellent. That's right next door to the mm-hmm. Diamond. They have concerts there in the summertime, and they pipe it out mm-hmm. into Diamond Park. So the system is already right. all set up, ready to go.
Right. So we decided to utilize that so that nobody had to freeze their fingers off while they're playing their instruments in the cold.
Or
so.
Your lip. If you're, or if your you're lip. Playing a saxophone or a trumpet like that, it's yeah. a little difficult in cold weather.
Mm-hmm.
You're hoping for I don't know, what are you hoping for? You don't want it to be 20 below zero, but on the other hand, you know, the first time you ever did this was 65 degrees, and you had to worry about the ice sculptures melting. You kind of want an in-between thing, I guess, huh, Dina?
We do. We're hoping 35 to 40 and cloudy. No precipitation is our fingers crossed for Friday, Saturday. And we want the ice to last into Sunday. This will be the first time that we've kept our signage up, and we invite people to come throughout the weekend mm-hmm. to see the ice that remains. So we're hoping that it stays for a long time for everybody to see.
But rest assured, and we've proven this already in the 4 years that this has been held, even if it's extremely warm, people come, sometimes wearing tank tops and shorts. And if it's kind of cold and a little on the miserable side weather-wise, which it was last year, mm-hmm. you still got huge crowds.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's something to do in winter in Butler. It's so unique. You don't see anything quite like this to the level that we're taking it. Mm-hmm. It's each year we have grown it, Dave, and this year we're growing it even further. I do want to quickly mention, I know I've had a lot of questions from people I know about the kids' activities on Saturday. We really pumped them up last year, and this year we're kicking it up several other notches. I think it's important for people to realize that we're offering a lot of things that are totally free for the kids. Mm-hmm. New York Life is doing their ID screening mm-hmm. For the kids, which is hugely important. We're also going to have from Lovely Day Events in Pittsburgh, we're going to be having the Snow Princess and Snow Buddy, yeah. And so these are people that are dressed in costume. We've had them before, but it was like several years ago. And we had a lot of requests to bring them back. And so as we kind of restructured what we were doing, they're coming back. And so people are going to have a wonderful photo opportunity. I mean, we're not taking photos of them. You bring your phone, you bring your camera, you take your own pictures. It doesn't cost you anything to
well,
do
that's
that.
That's a difference mm-hmm. from a lot of events.
That's
where
huge.
Yeah, mm-hmm. you know, you got to pay to have a photographer take the pictures. You can take your own pictures with your kids.
Yeah, and that's why I wanted to put it that way. We're having the scavenger hunt again for the kids. Any kid that wants to participate is going to get something out of it anyway. So we got them today. They're getting these little cards, and they mark off everything they go find. It might be a particular ice sculpture. It might be the chili cook-off. It might be a particular tent. So it's going to be a fun thing. Kids really had a great time with this last year, and Butler County Children's Center is helping to organize that for us.
And this hunt will take place within the park, right? Within Diamond Park, for the most part?
Well, no, they'll be on Main Street, too.
Oh, up and down Main Street?
Yeah, because we have Main Street partially closed, like
on
we
Saturday.
Always do.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
on Saturday. And then the weekend backpack folks are going to be back at the Art Center with us, offering all kinds of free crafts, and they do some beautiful things. So the kids are going to thoroughly enjoy that. We have face painting that's going on down there, which I think kids really enjoy. And then we have our balloon artists who have been with us every year, and they make some of the most intricate types of balloon. It isn't just animals. They just do a fabulous job. So the kids are going to have an absolutely great time.
The Art Center mm-hmm. is half a block from Diamond Park. I mean, it's right next to it.
Right.
Oh, yeah, and I do have to mention, they have been so gracious with us. Since the second year we've been down there, we've been having the chili cook-off down there and the weekend backpack program and so on. But they have been so gracious in allowing us to use their facilities and helping us set up. They could not be nicer to us.
So the chili cook-off, can you tell me a little bit more about this? Is this Going to be a contest again like it has in some of the past years, or what's the deal on that, Dina?
It is going to be a contest. We actually have two prizes that we award. There's going to be a People's Choice Award, and there's also going to be a Judge's Choice. We have some special judges coming in that will judge chili for us, and then also the People's Choice. We have six local restaurants that are coming out to help us today, and also one of them is going to be the Butler Votech. They're going to come down and have some chili there for us. In addition, we'll have the Monroe Hotel is going to be there, King's Restaurant, both of which the Monroe and King's were winners last year. Monroe was the People's Choice Award, and King was the Judges Award winner last year, so happy to have them back. And I can't find on my sheet where they are. Oh, we have the John Marshall Catering. It's first year that John Marshall, who is a Rotarian, is coming in, and they're going to be there at the event. And we also have Missing Links Breweries coming, and we're going to be able to sample their chili this year as well. And the Texas Roadhouse. This will be our first year for having the Texas Roadhouse. So we're very excited. I like their chili, so I'm glad that they'll be there.
So people that want to participate in this, the general public, you pay a small fee, and then
it's a $5 donation that they'll make when they come down to the art center to do it. All the chili vendors will be set up in there, and they get actually a very decent sized portion of chili. We usually have people saying, "Oh, it's too much chili," but they thoroughly enjoy it because people stand there and they compare it. Oh, this is salty, or this is spicy, or wow, this is different. I love this, and then they'll be able to vote to make that choice, and the winners for both the Judge's Choice and the People's Choice get trophies.
So you go around to the different booths and sample all
just,
the chilies.
They're tables that are along the wall, and they're given samples of everything then, and then they just place their vote. And while they're down there before they leave, then they can participate in our basket auction. And we have about 20 or so absolutely incredible baskets this year. I thought they were great last year from what I've been hearing of the contents of some of them this year. I think we're gonna knock it out of the ballpark. It just amazes me. Butler is a basket auction town.
Let me take a break, and when we come back, maybe we'll talk a little bit about some of those baskets. This is a big event. It's a destination event now, and it's 2 days now. It's Friday evening, and then Saturday, 11 a.m. till
11 to 4 on
four
Saturday.
On Saturday. Mm-hmm. It's Butler AM Rotary's Carved in Ice Festival and Chili Cook-Off. And it's coming up, not this weekend, but the following one, Friday, February 21st, Saturday, February 22nd. Back to talk a little more about it with Dina and Peggy right after these words.
Tri-Rivers Musculoskeletal Centers congratulates orthopedic foot and ankle surgeon Dr. William Saar for being named a Best Doc by Pittsburgh Magazine for the third straight year.
I'm Dr. William Saar with Tri-Rivers. Whether you suffer a foot or ankle-related trauma, such as a fracture or dislocation, or require reconstructive foot and ankle surgery, I rely on my extensive experience and specialized training to get you back on your feet. For more information or to schedule an appointment, please visit TriRiversMSK.com or call 1-866-874-7483.
Hey, here's a good way to beat the winter blahs. Get out of town for a few days. Why not take a trip with Butler Motor Tours? Butler Motor Tours, a local company. They're on South Monroe Street in Butler. They've been around for more than 75 years. And when you travel with Butler Motor Tours, you travel in comfort on one of their big motor coaches, their big cruisers. By the way, they always take trips down to Florida, too, in the winter months. So there's an idea to look at. If you want to check out their offerings, just go to their website. It's butlerbus.com. Butlerbus.com. All their upcoming trips are listed there with the dates and the itinerary and the cost and all of that. You can even book online if you so desire. And you can get gift certificates, too. Butler Motor Tours. Check them out online at butlerbus.com. That's Butler Motor Tours online at butlerbus.com. Hey, we're talking about the Butler AM Rotary's Carved in Ice Festival and Chili Cook-Off. It's coming back. This will be the fifth year for it now. Not this weekend, but the following one. And here to give us more details on it are Dina Martinez and Peggy Weckerly, both members of Butler AM Rotary. Will there be, as there has been in past years, Dina, somebody who's actually carving ice right there on the spot where you can kind of watch the demonstration of how they do this, because most of the statuary will be done already, but...
Yeah, we will definitely have on-site carving. What they do for us is all of our single blocks come carved, so they bring those with them in the trucks, in the refrigerated trucks, and we'll put those out. But anything that's larger, you know, the 4-block, 5 blocks, and then up to the 12-block, which is going to be our interactive dragon this year, those will all be carved on site. So we have 6 or 7 larger sculptures that'll be done. We'll do 2 to 3 Friday evening, and then the rest we'll do on Saturday throughout the day. And it's really interesting to watch them carve. I mean, they are professionals, and the art that they create from ice is just amazing.
It's mesmerizing. Mm-hmm. I can remember one year standing there watching a guy for half an hour. Uh-huh. He's a chainsaw, and then a little bitty chainsaw, and then some chisels and stuff like that. It's amazing.
Yeah, the detail they get is great.
So you get to be able to watch that once again. And we mentioned before the break, Peggy, the basket auction that's going to take place. The baskets will be down at the Art Center, just down the street, a few doors from Diamond Park. Do we have any idea about a couple of the baskets that might be available?
Well, I can tell you about a couple of them right off the top. One is a jewelry basket, which I think a lot of the women, and maybe mm-hmm. some of the men who want their women to love them, they're going to really find absolutely unusual, because we've never had anything like that before. And one of the things that we do every year is that we welcome gift cards from downtown and area merchants and restaurants who might want to donate, and we've had a variety of different donations. We also ask each of our chili vendors mm-hmm. to donate a gift card too. So when you get that basket, it's going to be incredible. You're going to eat well and buy well around the area, which I think is fantastic.
So if anybody wants to buy some tickets for the basket auction, you can do that at the Art Center, right?
That'll be down at the Art Center, correct. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And one of the other things, too, that we have not mentioned, but I want to mention very quickly, our 50-50 drawing that we had last year, Carved in Ice, the winner took home over $4,400. So we're hoping this year the winner is going to take over well over $5,000. So you'll want to make sure you buy the 50-50
Ooh,
tickets.
Baby.
Can't win if you don't play. And that's just a local mm-hmm. thing. We started it. Well, we've done it. Last year, we really did it to a whole different level. So, you know, I want people to be sure that they take advantage of that. And I do want to stress that all of our money that we make, all of our proceeds, go to Butler AM Rotary Charities, which is the 501c3 nonprofit that we set up back in 2013 for our club. So it's huge. This is our biggest fundraiser each year, Dave. And this is the money that we get from this is what allows us to donate $35,000 to $40,000 a year to various groups, mostly in the Butler area, but also there are a couple internationally too that we do help out that we feel are very important. Most of our thrust, if you recall, is emphasizing children, mm-hmm. youth leadership, kids in need, you name it. That's the kind of thing that we spend time on. That's why we did the Save Our Playground campaign at Butler Memorial Park.
Yeah.
And thanks to your listeners and all the other people around Butler and some grants that we put in, we were able to raise over $170,000 for that.
Is that nearing completion, or will it be wrapped up come good weather? Or
Phase 3 in good weather, yes. We have finishing touches. The playground, the play equipment is done for the most part. Every year, Butler AM Rotary, recognizing the motto of service above self, is going to be out there in the spring doing touch-up work, because one of the commitments we made with the city, because they don't have the money to do it, is to maintain what we have within reason, you know, mm-hmm. whether it's mulch or whether it's paint or it's minor repair, some chain or something broke, whatever. So we're going to do that and some landscaping. We want to put in some benches. And then this year, when we do this, we want to put in a very nice recognition place sign type of thing, which is going to recognize our largest donors, our business donors.
Well, you can't do that sort of stuff when it's muddy and
no.
wet out there. It's not good construction work, although I've marveled at the crews that are putting up the new streetlights and street poles in downtown Butler, and they've been working right through the lousy weather. And don't those new poles and lights look nice? Have you seen them at night?
Unbelievable. Yet? And I think that's going to enhance what we're doing. We were talking about
Absolutely.
That. That's going to enhance our Friday night. Mm-hmm. Even though the ice is in lights, you'll be able to see what you're doing around the area, which is going to be fabulous.
I'm really impressed by those things.
We were excited to see that they were up and they're going to be, ready to go for our event.
They did it just for us.
That's it.
So, one more thing about the playground at Butler Memorial Park. This is located near the
Miller Shelter.
Near the Miller Shelter, and that's across the road from the football field or in that area, the playing fields.
Mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So pretty much all new equipment. Beautiful.
I haven't been down to look at that yet. I'll have to stop down.
You need to go down.
Check it out.
Yeah. ADA parking, ADA sidewalk to get to it. Yeah.
A wonderful project undertaken by Butler AM Rotary. And they're able to undertake projects like this, big projects, my goodness, because they raise money in events like the Carved in Ice Festival. And folks, this is not like, you're doing penance when you go to this to help out with their fundraising. My goodness, this is sort of like wearing a hair shirt. This is a fun day or a fun evening or a fun day. Friday night, more of an adult thing. With the beer and wine available and so on and so forth.
But we will have hot chocolate.
And coffee.
For the teetotalers or the people that maybe have too much to drink and then decide they want to have coffee. But definitely hot chocolate for the kids.
And what are the hours again for Friday night, February 21st, Dina?
Friday is 5 p.m. to 8 p.m., so hopefully anybody leaving work can stop after work, visit a food truck because we'll have those there, listen to some entertainment.
Good idea, good times.
And see some ice on the lights on the ice.
And then on Saturday, it starts at 11 a.m.
It's 11 to 4 on Saturday. Our chili cook-off will go 11 to 3. Then we'll stop the chili cook-off at 3 and get the word on the judging out there and pull some basket winners.
And this is, again, not this weekend, but the following one, February 21st, Friday night, Saturday, February 22nd. And Peggy, there's still time for a business to purchase an ice sculpture, or is that deadline passed?
If they do it today or first thing tomorrow morning, there's time. We still would be very appreciative of donations of $250 for building the ice slide.
Okay.
Because that's something where a number of businesses go with a lesser amount because they don't want to invest in a larger sculpture for themselves. And so as a result, we can always use extra for that.
Good. Or last minute. For a basket auction or something like that.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Yeah. Peggy Weckerly and Dina Martinez, both Rotarians with Butler AM Rotary, giving us the details on this. It's a great event. It's a lot of fun. Carved in Ice Festival and a chili cook-off. And new this year, Friday evening added to the previous Saturday events. Event sponsor, you mentioned, is Deal Toyota, right?
The event sponsor, yes, is Deal Toyota.
And Conlon Tarker for the Friday night.
That's correct.
Yeah. Nice to see the two of you today.
Thank you. Well. It's always great to be here.
Nice to have you here. As promised yesterday, we're going to take a break here, but our next guest who will join us by telephone is Elizabeth Hennessy, Dr. Hennessy. And we're going to be talking about, most of you I'm sure have heard of the Galapagos Islands off the coast of South America, off the coast of Chile or Ecuador. That's where they have these giant tortoises. They're like 100, 150 years old. Charles Darwin stopped there, when he was developing the theory of evolution way back when. There are environmental concerns about these islands that are significant concerns, and we'll talk about that with Dr. Elizabeth Hennessy. She'll be joining us by telephone next here on It's Your Turn on WISR. Just a couple of minutes, so stick around. We'll be right back.
Heading out of town for that special Valentine's Day getaway? Be sure to stop by Tobacco for Less for all your smoking and vaping needs. They're Western PA's largest glass emporium, complete with hundreds of glass pipes to choose from. They also feature a walk-in humidor and a 19-foot vape juice bar. Even their health and wellness department stays fully stocked with a great selection of high-quality CBD products. For all your smoking and vaping needs, check out Tobacco for Less, with locations in Butler, Sharon, and Aliquippa.
Well, despite the old groundhog's prediction, we still may see some winter. The folks at West End Tire and Service are ready to go. They've got over 400 snow tires in stock for your car, light-duty truck. In fact, they've got tires for just about anything. You know where they are down there on West Cunningham Street. Used to be Siemens Tire Service. Well, they still have the same great people and the same great service that they always had. They can do brakes, shocks, struts, oil changes. They'll align your front end, rotate your tires, and fix your tires. And their talented technicians are there all the time to check your air pressure and do evaluations for free anytime you stop in. It's West End Tire and Service, West Cunningham Street, right next to Battery Warehouse Plus.
Coming up on the next segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR, folks, I'm Dave Malarkey. We're going to be talking about turtles. Well, more accurately, tortoises. And what a fascinating conversation I'm anticipating with our guest, who joins us by telephone today, Dr. Elizabeth Hennessy. PhD. She's the author of a recently published book entitled On the Backs of Tortoises, Darwin, the Galapagos, and the Fate of an Evolutionary Eden. That's a long, long-winded preface there, Dr. Hennessy, but it's nice to talk to you. I've really been looking forward to a chat with you.
Well, thanks so much for having me on, Dave. I appreciate it.
The first time that I can remember hearing about the Galapagos, and I probably speak for most folks who are not scientists, would be in, you know, like ninth grade biology class when we were studying Charles Darwin and on the origin of species. Would I be correct on that? That's when most people heard about the Galapagos?
Yeah, I think that's probably the first time I heard about them, too, talking about Darwin's finches and processes of evolution in the islands.
The islands are located off the western coast of South America, closest to what country, Dr. Hennessy?
They are an Ecuadorian territory. They are on the equator directly west of the state of Ecuador.
I assume that...
Not nearly as far out into the Pacific as Hawaii is from the U.S., but okay. Pretty far nonetheless.
I assume you've been there. I don't know for sure.
I have. I started going there in 2007 when I started graduate school, and I have been, I think, 10 times now over the last 12 years or so.
Oh, wow. Wow. Folks, Dr. Hennessy is an assistant professor of history and environmental studies at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and she serves as, among other things, faculty advisor for the graduate student-run digital magazine. And obviously she knows a lot about the Galapagos, having been there so many times. So what do most of us think when we hear Galapagos? We think these ancient tortoises, who are, number one, as I remember, Dr. Hennessy, they're very large and they're very old, correct?
Yes, that's absolutely right. They can live to be 150, maybe even 200 years old. No one really knows exactly how long for sure. And they can grow to be, you know, more than 500 pounds, sometimes up to 5 feet long. And, you know, when old sailors used to go to the Galapagos, they like to eat the tortoises. But they would always record their impressions of them by how many people they could get to sit on the backs of any particular tortoise. So some of them, they say, up to five people, which is pretty incredible.
Kind of like back in the 50s when undergraduates used to see how many people they could get into a phone booth or something like that, I guess.
Yeah, I suppose something like that.
Today's college students would not know what a phone booth is, of course. So
no.
Need a different
analogy.
Students
definitely don't use phone booths.
I jokingly mentioned turtles at the beginning of our conversation. There is a distinction. And for us lay people, what's the difference between a turtle and a tortoise?
It's a good question, and it's something that is confusing to a lot of people, including myself. When I started this project, it took me a long time to learn to say tortoises naturally. But tortoises in the Galapagos are land animals, and turtles, when we talk about turtles in Galapagos, we're usually talking about sea turtles, so ocean-dwelling species.
So
in the U.S., the difference is a little bit more murky. We have turtles generally, we have things like the box turtle that do live on land, and so is, I think, technically by this definition a tortoise, but it's not a term that we use that often in the U.S.
And we have snapping turtles here in the U.S. that you see both in the water and on the land. I didn't realize that the tortoises of Galapagos never went into the sea, so they're on the land all the time. Huh?
Yeah, they're on the land all the time. They definitely do not like to be in the water. And there's not a lot of fresh water. There aren't a lot of, you know, lakes and streams in Galapagos. So the giant tortoises are definitely land animals. There are also many sea turtle species in Galapagos, too. But mm-hmm. those aren't the ones that I wrote about.
Are these tortoises on the Galapagos? By the way, as I understand it from your book, the name of the islands actually comes from the name of the tortoises. Is that correct, Doctor?
Yeah, that is correct. So the islands were named Galapagos by Spanish sailors back 400, 500 years ago when the Spanish were, you know, conquesting the Americas. And they went to Galapagos and saw these enormous tortoises and so decided to call the islands Galapagos, which is an old Spanish word for tortoise.
Never knew that.
And for them, it's interesting. And for them, it marked the islands as a place for a resource. They went because they wanted to be able to eat these giant tortoises that people thought were really delicious.
Are these tortoises, I want to get into a little bit of your research and the science here. Are these tortoises prehistoric? I mean, they go back as far as the age of the dinosaurs, or do we know?
They actually predate dinosaurs. All tortoise species and turtle species do. The tortoises in the Galapagos have been in the islands for about a million years, so that particular species comes after the dinosaurs. But so yes, the scientists often call them living fossils. So that means that they are these really, really old species that have managed to persist. And despite having, you know, lots of other tortoise species and giant tortoises were killed off by human predators, but not in the Galapagos.
Hmm. Well, I want to get to one of the main thrusts of your book. And listeners, if you're joining us a little bit late here in our conversation with Dr. Elizabeth Hennessy, her recently published book is entitled On the Backs of Tortoises. Subtitle, Darwin, the Galapagos and the Fate of an Evolutionary Eden. Well, let's talk about Darwin. Darwin sailed, I think, if I remember correctly, the name of his ship was the HMS Beagle.
Mm-hmm, that is correct.
And when I say that, I always think of Snoopy for some reason. Did Darwin know about the Galapagos, or did he land there accidentally? Tell us a little bit about that history, please.
Sure. So Darwin sailed in the 1830s. They left England in 1832, and they got to Galapagos in 1835. And they had crossed the Atlantic and then went down around the southern tip of South America and then back up along the South American coast and then out west across the Pacific. And Darwin was really excited to go to Galapagos. They weren't 100% sure when they left England that they would be able to make the trip there. And the reason is that the Beagle wasn't primarily a natural history expedition. It was a geopolitical expedition that was sent by the British Admiralty, the British Navy, to chart the coast of South America. And that was happening during a time of South American independence, and so independence from Spain. And so all of these new colonies and new states were open to new trade partners. And so the British were really interested in finding ways to trade with these new colonies. And so that's what the Beagle's captain, Fitzroy, was charged with doing. And they had enough time, and so they went to Galapagos and also made a chart of Galapagos. And while most of the crew was doing that, Darwin was always really seasick, and so he would love to get off on land and explore wherever he could. And so he got to spend a lot of time on the Galapagos Islands looking at tortoises and the finches and mockingbirds and all these other cool species.
Son of a gun. I've learned a lot already. And, of course, to get to the western side of South America back in those days, no Panama Canal, so they had to go the whole way down to Tierra del Fuego and through mm-hmm. the Straits of Magellan and then back up the other side of South America to do this charting, this land mapping.
Yeah, exactly, and they spent about 3 years making that trip. They stopped a lot along the way, but it was a really treacherous trip down around the south. Down the southern point of South America and Tierra del Fuego, and that's part of the reason that the Pacific is called the Pacific, because once they got out of those really treacherous and often stormy waters, the like coming back up north to warmer tropical islands, the sea was much calmer and much more Pacific.
Well, now I ask you the really tough question, you know, in 35 words or less, how does Darwin's visit to the Galapagos tie in with his evolving theory of evolution?
Well, that's a great question, and it's something that we, I think, in the West often hear about Darwin kind of discovering evolution while he was in the Galapagos. Like, it wasn't like an apple fell on his head kind of eureka moment, but it was definitely, the islands were really influential for him, and he collected a lot of bird species. He spent a lot of time like looking at the tortoises and observing them, but it wasn't until he was actually back in England a couple years after the Beagle Voyage, as he was going through all of his specimens, that the idea for evolution by natural selection really clicked for him.
And did the tortoises play a role, or was it more the birds and so on that he was studying?
Well, he didn't take any specimen collections of the tortoises. And while he was in the Galapagos, there was a colony actually in the Galapagos when the Beagle visited, and people who were working with the colony told Darwin that they could tell what island a tortoise came from just by looking at it, because their shapes, their shells are different shapes, and they have slightly different coloring on their faces and necks. And Darwin said later in his journal about his travel voyage, like, I didn't pay enough attention to that until several years later. But he had taken a lot of specimens of bird species. So when he had a bird specialist look at them back in England, the specialist said, you know, these are actually all different species. These aren't just different variations of one species. And that was really the key for Darwin.
I suppose back in those days, he wouldn't have had any real accurate idea of just how old these tortoises were, right?
No, and it was actually a huge point of contention about Darwin's theory, because for his version of evolution to have worked, just to have enough time for species to evolve, the Earth would have had to have been many, many, many hundreds of millions of years older than people commonly thought it was when he was alive. And so a lot of scientists didn't believe him for many years, just because they didn't think the Earth would have had enough time to go through these processes.
Well, folks, we have to take a quick break. We have a couple more minutes to chat with Dr. Elizabeth Hennessy, and when we come back, we're going to talk about a real catch-22 with regard to the future of the Galapagos and just how the fate of these tortoises are intertwined with human life. So please stick with us. We'll be back with more on the It's Your Turn program here on WISR in just a moment. Be right back.
Michael's Restaurant is now open for breakfast at 7 a.m. Join us for breakfast any day of the week, including after church on Sundays. Have you made plans for dinner yet? Bring the family for a great home-cooked meal. Michael's Restaurant also offers great Sunday dinner specials, stuffed chicken breasts, stuffed pork chops, lasagna, and more.
Concordia Visiting Nurses has resources for patients who struggle with a serious illness. Visit cvnpalliativecare.org, an online educational website designed to help the seriously ill and their families to live as comfortably as possible while still receiving curative care. This free educational website offers practical tips and information. Choose Concordia Visiting Nurses.
The Spencer D. Geibel Funeral Home and Cremation Services, located at 140 Newcastle Road. It's about halfway up Newcastle Hill, just down from the State Police Barracks. This is the Butler area's newest funeral home, Spencer D. Geibel Funeral Home, the first and only value-designed funeral home built specifically for that purpose. A funeral home that offers styles, types, and levels of service that others are not able or willing to offer. They can transfer all prearranged funeral services and policies as well. It's an entirely new idea. It's local, and there's a hometown gentleman running the operation, Spencer D. Geibel. Spencer D. Geibel Funeral Home and Cremation Services, 140 Newcastle Road in Butler. Not affiliated with any other funeral home. Welcome back. I'm Dave Malarkey, and on this segment of It's Your Turn, we're talking about the tortoises of the Galapagos and the interrelation between human and non-human life on these islands off the coast of South America. Our guest is Elizabeth Hennessy. Dr. Hennessy is a professor of history and environmental studies at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and she's just published a book recently out within the past few months entitled On the Backs of Tortoises, Darwin, the Galapagos, and the Fate of an Evolutionary Eden. It's the catch-22 that I mentioned, Dr. Hennessy, is the fact that as more and more people learn about the Galapagos, they're traveling there, and that has the real potential to destroy the pristine environment. Is that it in a nutshell, Doctor?
Yeah, I think that's it in a nutshell. You know, in the United States and in Europe, too, we tend to know Galapagos from, you know, from high school biology, but then also from nature documentaries and things that really celebrate the incredible wildlife that exists there. But the story that isn't usually told in those nature documentaries is the human history of the islands and how integral that has been to, you know, histories of hunting of tortoises, but also of conservation and tourism development now, too. And so in the book, I'm really trying to express that history and to get into some of these issues like the Catch-22. So when there's a national park in the Galapagos, 97% of the islands are protected in that park, and that's existed since 1959. And when it started, it was, you know, about 500 people lived in the archipelago. Today, about 30,000 people live there. And, you know, there was not really a tourism industry when it started. Even in the late 70s, only about 2,000 people were visiting a year. But now it's up to about 270,000 people a year visiting. And so the national park has a huge task of managing local populations and their relationships with the environment, but also even more so tourists and our relationships with the environment there.
So it's a real challenge then in trying to, you're walking a fine line when you're talking about ecotourism, I guess, huh?
It is, and I think most people don't often think about this when they think about ecotourism, but, you know, we, especially in Galapagos, it really highlights this because it's an archipelago that's so far out from the continent. There's not a lot of fresh water there, so nearly everything that anyone needs in the Galapagos has to be imported from out from the continent. And so it makes it, yeah, really difficult to have a more sustainable industry when things are, you know, there are cargo ships coming out constantly. And that, you know, with those cargo ships run the risk of introducing species that we don't want in Galapagos, like rats and parasitic flies, et cetera, et cetera. And those are really difficult to control.
Who claims the Galapagos? Are they claimed by Ecuador? Or?
Yeah, they've been in Ecuadorian territory since 1832, so before Darwin was ever there. And the national park, the government, does actually a really good job of managing the islands, of managing tourism. So if you go on a cruise in Galapagos, every 16 people have to have a naturalist guide with them at all times when you're on land. Mm-hmm. And the cruises go to particular visitor sites. You can't just go anywhere you want to go. And so the national park does a good job of monitoring that and trying to make that as sustainable as possible.
Can you give us a ballpark figure of just how far off the coast of Ecuador they are? I mean, is, you know, 20 miles or 2,000 miles? Well, how far out are they into the Pacific?
They are 600 miles out.
Okay.
So it's about an hour and a half plane ride from the coast.
And far enough, I guess.
So it's quite a distance. Yeah, it's quite a distance.
And it would be a separate ecosystem, I guess. I mean, that far from land.
Mm-hmm. It absolutely is. And that's part of the reason that, you know, creatures like giant tortoises have evolved there, because there aren't, you know, there aren't any big natural mammals. And the only big predator for tortoises is when they're babies, are the hawks, and and then introduced rats to also prey on baby tortoises and eat their eggs. And so a lot of the reason that these, you know, these really unusual animals have been able to evolve there is because the archipelago was so isolated.
We learned a lot about the Bahamas last fall with the horrific hurricanes. And when we speak of the Bahamas, it's really many, many islands, some of them large, some of them small. Are there numerous islands in the Galapagos, or is it just like two or three big ones? What's the story on that?
There are 13 major islands and many, like more than 100 smaller islets. Some of them are quite large and have, you know, five different volcanoes. The whole archipelago is of volcanic origin. And some of the volcanoes in the westernmost islands are still erupting. There was an eruption earlier, or last month in January. And then some of the islands are much older now and are no longer volcanically active. And there are, on four of those big islands, there are towns as well where people live.
You mentioned that the population is now up to around 30,000. What do these people do? Do they earn their living through ecotourism, or is there industry there? How do they make a living?
Yeah, it's a good question. Most of it is through tourism. That's definitely the lifeblood of the local economy. A lot of people also work for the national park or for conservation environmental NGOs. Too, it's a province, just like our states. So there's also provincial government in Galapagos, and so that's another major employer. There really isn't a lot of industry that doesn't relate directly to tourism, but there are things like cattle ranching and some chicken farms as well.
I understand that there have been instances, I don't know how widespread, where some people have actually slaughtered the tortoises. Is that correct?
Yeah, that has happened and continues to happen, not terribly frequently. In the mid-1990s and the mid-2000s, there was a lot of external influence in the fishing industry, and there was a lot of, you know, people from other markets trying to buy a lot of fish, and so the fishers were getting these amazing loans to fish a lot more than usual and a lot more than the park would like them to. And so there were a lot of protests when the park tried to limit those fisheries. And the tortoises often were involved in those protests as symbols. Fishers would target them because they knew they were such powerful international symbols that, you know, they were trying to get their voices heard. And so they thought by targeting the tortoises that would propel them in this debate. And that did work, although I think it didn't have the effect that they wanted it to have.
We have the paradox today of more and more people interested in visiting the Galapagos, but the more people that you get there, the more danger there is to the environment. This is not the first time that they've been endangered, though. I understand from your book, Dr. Hennessy, that for centuries, really, the Galapagos were exploited by pirates, by whalers, by a bunch of people, right?
Mm-hmm. Actually, I think today, I mean, the tourism industry is definitely a concern, but I think the islands are in much better shape than they were 200 years ago. The estimates are that sailors, pirates, buccaneers, and also island colonists killed somewhere upwards of 200,000 giant tortoises, which they relied on for food that everybody seemed to think was enormously delicious. And the tortoises also have a lot of fat storage, and so they would render that fat for oil too, for cooking, and also for a while it used to light street lamps on the continent in Ecuador. Huh. And so only about 20,000 or so tortoises remain today, so that really decimated the population.
This is so interesting to me, and I have to wrap up here because I'm keeping you too long, but do we know anything about, was there indigenous population on the Galapagos? I'm thinking, you know, like, were the Incas able to travel that far, or don't we know?
We don't know for sure. There was never an indigenous population that colonized the islands, so there, you know, but there are records of some pottery shards, and there's debate about the dating of those shards to figure out exactly when. There are also some old Inca legends that were taken down by, you know, the Spanish 500 years ago that lead people to believe that maybe, yes, the Incas did visit and some of the other coastal indigenous populations from South America visited the islands, but there's not a lot of solid proof about that.
The Galapagos sit right on the equator, as you told us earlier. Is there a change of seasons throughout the year or not, and would that contribute to the development of the species there?
Yeah, there are two main seasons in Galapagos. There is a kind of hot, rainy season, which we're in now, when you'll get, you know, pretty significant downpours once a day or so, but its temperature is pretty warm. And then the kind of midsummer through our fall and December is what's called the Garua season, which is cooler temperatures and the kind of more cloud cover and kind of really fine misty rain. And so, yes, that is the drier season, and definitely the animals and the plant species as well have evolved to being able to withstand that.
One final question. How many plane changes did you have to make to fly from Madison, Wisconsin to the Galapagos?
That's a good question. The last time I went, I flew Madison, Chicago, Houston, Quito, Guayaquil, Galapagos.
I thought it was going to be...
So, what is that, five?
Something like that, yes. Folks, if you're looking for Dr. Hennessy's book, it's Elizabeth Hennessy. The title is On the Backs of Tortoises. Fascinating stuff. Doctor, thanks for chatting with us today. It was wonderful.
Thanks so much for having me, Dave.
Sure. So long now. Interesting stuff, huh? Yeah, and what a paradox. Really depend on the tourism traffic for pretty much the only economy on the Galapagos. But by the same token, there are so many tourists now that there's grave concerns about the environment there. So didn't know a whole lot about them until that chat with Dr. Elizabeth Hennessy, about 600 miles off the coast of Ecuador and sitting right on the equator. Well, that wraps up our program for today. We thank our earlier guests. It was delightful to chat with Dina Martinez and Peggy Weckerly about the upcoming Carved in Ice Winter Festival and a chili cook-off coming up, not this weekend, but the following one in downtown Butler in Diamond Park. On tomorrow's program, we'll be chatting with guests from the Pittsburgh Regional Chamber North. We also have a number of other guests lined up as we move through the rest of the week. So we certainly hope that you're able to stick with us here for It's Your Turn every weekday, Monday through Friday, starting at 12:30 here on WISR. And I hope you enjoy the rest of your day. And I'm Dave Malarkey. We'll see you tomorrow at 12:30 for the Wednesday edition of It's Your Turn.
Do you know what Jimmy Chiprian and Jimmy Garoppolo from the 49ers have in common? I do. It's called second place. Sparky Mare's Hair, a.k.a. the Spark After Dark. I perfected my secret recipe, and Chiprian ain't going to win this year. Consider this your official invitation to come February 15th to Men Who Cook Dinner at the Vagabond Center, presented by Armstrong and WISR, and vote for me, the Spark After Dark. Tickets, just $20 pre-sale at the radio station offices or online at butlerradio.com. Proceeds benefit St. Vincent de Paul Food Bank. And remember, bring one, bring all, bring your taste buds, and hope to see you there. Thank you.
Do you know an incredible kid? Don't we all? It could be the neighbor who always mows your grass or the youngster who collects food for the elderly at church. Maybe your incredible kid read 30 books over the summer, overcame a significant challenge, or started her own small business. Consider nominating your incredible kid in the Incredible Kid Contest, presented by the Butler Radio Network and American Natural. Every month, listeners can submit a photo and a brief profile story of what makes this nominee the perfect candidate for our Incredible Kid Contest. Each of the nominees must be 18 years of age or younger. Nominations will be accepted the first 2 weeks of each month, which will then be followed by 2 weeks of voting by you, our local listeners. The winner will be interviewed on the radio, recognized on the Incredible Kid Contest page, and receive lunch for two at American Natural. To learn more about submitting your Incredible Kid, go to butlerradio.com. As Albert Einstein once said, children are our most valuable resource. So let's recognize their successes and celebrate their accomplishments.
Thanks for joining us for today's edition of It's Your Turn with Dave Malarkey here on WISR 680 AM. Today's broadcast is also archived for you online at WISR680.com. Tune in again next time for Dave Malarkey's It's Your Turn, weekdays from 12:30 to 1:30, right here on WISR 680.
So good.